May it please the court.
Thus, you may proceed.
The issue in this case is whether a notice of citation is the equivalent of an initial violation report to bar a probationer from accruing earned compliance credits under Section 217703. Our position is that a notice of citation is not the equivalent. And as a result, my client, April Coleman, the relator in this case, had earned enough earned compliance credits combined with her time on supervised probation to have been discharged early prior to respondent ordering her probation suspended in August 2016. In this case, the Division of Probation and Parole had issued four notices of citation to my client during the first 33 months of a 60-month probation term. Prior to the issuance of these citations, Ms. Coleman had on different occasions been given an optimal discharge date of May 1st, 2016 in her case summary reports that had been filed by the division. Here, May 1st, 2016 fell more than 3 months before respondent initiated revocation proceedings. For these reasons, we argued that the court had lost statutory authority to revoke Ms. Coleman's probation. I'm prepared to make some arguments.
So what did the department do? What did they do when your client got the citations? Was your client given credit for ECCs for those months or not given credit in the reports?
Based on the respondent's brief in this case, Your Honor, it appears that she was not credited. Had she been credited, she would have been, she had not been credited, is our belief. We have not seen anything on the record or on the docket suggesting otherwise.
It nonetheless showed that she was entitled to release before probation was revoked.
Prior to, Your Honor, under the provisions of 217703, Division of Probation and Parole had actually a year earlier entered a calculation of her optimal discharge date. However, that was prior to her notices of citation being filed. And as a result, that's why we don't have a record.
Okay.
I want to make several arguments, Your Honor. First of all, we would argue that our client is compliant under the plain and ordinary meaning of 217703. That is, that probationer under that statute is deemed in compliance in the absence of an initial violation report, a motion to revoke or suspend, and had not been deemed an absconder. None of these had occurred prior to that, to the optimal discharge date or to the earned, well, to what we're arguing is the earned discharge date of Ms. Coleman. She had received her initial field violation report on August 8th.
In your view, what does it take to constitute that? I mean, does it have to have the magic words? How did the department themselves consider it?
Well, in the statute, and that's all we have at this time, it refers to an initial violation report. Mm-hmm. In the suite of reports that the Division of Probation and Parole has at its use, there's one, a field violation report that includes the terms violation report. And that's what we're arguing constitutes the violation report under the statute.
What if it just said report at the top and then it listed all the violations? Why doesn't that count?
Well, because of the term in Ms. Coleman's case, of two words, actually, in her field violation report that was actually authored on June 16, 2016, but filed with the report on August 8th, it had the term field, again, violation report, and under the type of report, it actually said initial. We take that to mean initial violation report.
Well, is it your position that it has to say initial violation report always, or in some theoretical sense, or here they have multiple forms? Some are called citations, some are called violation report, initial violation report, and so it's the department has chosen to have different kinds of forms, and when they didn't issue the and therefore following their own terminology, only one of these was an initial violation report.
Your Honor, the short answer is notices of citation, and these are citations that are rather brief in both of content and form, will often list some violations, but usually they're highly technical. It has the form and the function, it appears, of being more having more of a warning property to it than the field violation reports, which include
there's nothing in the statutes that talks about citations, is there?
Your Honor, the version of the statute that we're working under, or that was in place at the time, did not. However, I think it's instructive to revisit Section 217.703.4 as it appears in its latest iteration, and that's as of August 28th of this year. Compliance now under the statute means absence of an initial violation report or notice of citation.
But even assuming for just a second that we're not going to talk about whether or not that new statute applies here or not, looking at the citations in this case and the field violation report, the purpose of both, I think maybe you've acknowledged this, is to advise the court of the alleged violation. And doesn't both the citations, don't they both, the four of them here, and the field violation report later filed, don't they both all accomplish that same goal, that purpose?
On some level, Your Honor, it appears that they do.
To notify the court of the alleged violation.
To notify the court of a violation. We would argue, and we did argue in our filings, however, that a field violation report carries more of a triggering effect with it. Triggering, by triggering, I mean triggering a motion to suspend or revoke probation, a capious warrant, and ultimately a revocation hearing. Whereas citations, at least in our circuit, the experience has been rarely, if ever, do they trigger such an outcome.
Have those forms been in existence and been used long before earned compliance credits were even in existence?
Notices of citation
and a violation
field
report.
Violation reports. I can't answer that. I assume they had some mechanisms, Your Honor. I simply don't know. Anyway. Again, I would argue that these two different documents are distinguishable, and again I would argue that in Ms. Coleman's case, and I guess going back to your question, is that she did she was issued four notices of citation. There was no immediate move to suspend, revoke, or take any action against her. It was not until the field violation report was filed that August that revocation proceedings were initiated. So again, we take them that they are different.
Taking that they are different doesn't really answer the question about whether or not she should be entitled to earn compliance credits, though, right? I mean, presumably you would agree there is a situation where they might issue, even if they. A report that contained all that information, which purpose was to just make sure that earning compliance credits weren't earned as opposed to revoking somebody.
You seem
to suggest that if you're not trying to revoke them, then you're not trying to take away the earned compliance credits, and it doesn't seem to me that that's a logical argument.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I was trying to distinguish the effect of both reports.
Even if you're correct that generally these notice of violations aren't intended to initiate a revocation of probation, what about them suggests that they're not intended to keep earned compliance credits from accruing?
Again,
it's a middle step, right? I mean,
we would just go back to the statute as it existed at the time, which did not mention notice of citations. Does now, didn't then. at the time that these were.
That just wasn't an option at the time. If you wanted to suspend the accrual of credits, you had to issue an initial violation report at that time. Now you can do either.
That's my read on it, correct, Your Honor. I think what you'll be hearing is that we're being that we're overly fixated on style over substance. But I would argue that we are again going with the statutory plain and ordinary meaning of the of 217703, and that based on that we're arguing that the legislature's intent, at least at that time, was clear and unambiguous, and that based on Parrott v. Martinez, that we would argue that the court's bound by that intent, cannot resort to statutory construction. The courts cannot.
Excuse me, before you run out of time, would you discuss whether or not the 2018 amendment applies here?
Whether the 2018 amendment applies here? You mean as far as going back and applying citations to previous cases?
About restitution? The change in the statute with restitution?
Oh, I thought you meant with regard to the
excuse me. With regards to putting in the word citation.
Your Honor, we would argue simply that based on the statute as it was changed, and I thank you for that question, based on the change of the statute, we would argue that it now spells out two different cases to rescind, and that's what you would be talking about is rescission. One would be if the court held and revoked the probation of the probationer, and the other would be if the court or the Board of Probation and Parole determined that the type of violation was such that they would have to be continued on probation. Neither occurs here, so we would argue that that would be a rescission, and also we would argue that the results would just unfortunately potentially be absurd because you would have to go back and possibly apply it to other cases where notices of citations had been issued in the past. So, thank you. If I answered your question.
Not really, but that's okay. We'll get you on.
Mr. Kinski, could you address Judge Russell's question?
Yes, Your Honor, I would be more than happy to.
Thank you.
First, the interpretation that somehow the amendment means that a notice of citation was not a violation report or an initial violation report prior to the amendment is wrong. And it's wrong for at least two reasons that I'd like to point out. First, such an interpretation of 217.7034 would create an unnecessary and unworkable conflict with Section 217.7035. And let me explain what I mean. So 7034 now provides that compliance means the absence of an initial violation report or notice of citation submitted by a probation officer. But Section 217.7035 provides that credits do not accrue during any calendar month in which a violation report has been submitted. There is no reference in 703.5 to notice of citation. And that omission essentially creates a terrible conflict if you decide that a notice of citation and an initial violation report are two different things. Because then you've got 7034 saying that there's non-compliance when you file a notice of citation, but you've got 7035 saying nothing about the effect on accrual of earned compliance credits. And frankly, such a result we believe would be absurd. The primary objective of statutory construction is to determine legislative intent. And the case law is clear. These weren't cited in either side's brief, in my opinion, because the amendment happened after the filing of the reply brief. But the primary purpose is to construe legislative intent. And it says you look to the whole statutory provision. And the fact that there is no mention of notice of citation creates a conflict between 7034 and 7035. Unless you read a notice of citation to include a violation report.
And why did they add that language?
Well, I believe that what they tried to do was clarify, not attach labels to the violation reports. They could have said, and I wish they had said, that an initial violation report including a notice of citation.
But they didn't say that. Exactly, they didn't.
But there
in fact, hasn't a violation report been a term of art to refer to a specific document filed by a probation and parole for a very long time?
No, Your Honor, it has not, with all due respect. And for that, and I would again refer the court to other provisions involving violation reports. And we cited one of these in our brief before the amendment went into effect. But the same bill that amended Section 217.703 also amended provisions that refer to pre-sentence investigation reports under 217.760 and .762. And those provisions refer to pre-sentence investigation reports. That's what they're calling them. It has been many, many years since there's been a pre-sentence investigation report filed in the criminal courts of the state. They've been sentencing assessment reports. But they are pre-sentence investigation reports. I mean, they are reports that are provided to the court before sentencing. So they do fit that definition. And we also provided the court with another example, which deals with the situation where the probation officer feels that the person should have some sanction for a violation and go to jail for 24, 48 hours, some period of time, but doesn't want to have the probationer violated, and they file a report. And that report is not described in the statute initially, but later on they refer to that as a violation report. However, the judge has no discretion at that point to do anything, because if the probationer has accepted the period of jail incarceration, they are not, the judge has no authority to revoke their probation. So we've got two examples where the terms
you make a good point, but if you could address this, because the one flaw I see in it is to the extent opposing counsel is not arguing you have to have a certain label, and if you don't, it's not a violation report. He's saying you have two different reports. You didn't have to, but you had two different forms, and you called one initial violation report and the other notice of citation, so you're creating two separate things, and now you're asking us to treat them like they're the same. So your office or your predecessor's office has created this ambiguity and created this confusion by giving different labels. It's not that there has to be a certain label, but you have provided different labels, and only one seems to match the statute.
Well, first off, Your Honor, I don't know what you mean by my predecessor's office, but the reports that
whoever came up, Board of Probation and Parole, whoever came up with the forms.
Okay.
So that you're representing, therefore,
the position the reports.
But you're not representing
the
Department of Corrections. You're representing the judge, which is an issue that I've got
to make. Thank you. I want to point out, with all due respect to Your Honor, that I believe you're incorrect, because the report that generated the probation revocation hearing was not labeled initial violation report. It was labeled a field violation report.
Why do you have different reports with different labels, but you want us to treat them all as the same? Because that creates confusion.
No idea why the probation office labels things the way they do. One thing I'm certain of is a citation is not a citation, because if you look up the definition of citation, you find three meanings. You find either a document commending somebody for honorable conduct, you find a reference like to a case like 325 Southwest 3rd 702, or you find a summons to appear in court. And so their whole use of the word citation, the whole probation department's use of the word citation,
but as
seems to me to be nonsensical.
Yeah, sorry, excuse me. But in this case, the citations that were issued against the defendant, four of them, none of them resulted in any action being taken by the court. Only was the field violation report was the only one that was actionable.
That's true, and that's because.
So, is there a distinction in that?
Well, that's true, and that's because the judge, in the judge's discretion, decided that it didn't rate proceeding with a probation revocation hearing. But that was the judge's discretion. That wasn't something that the judge was prohibited from doing. And the actual the citations, which I would point out in the field violation report, are listed under a heading called violations. Mm-hmm. These violations were not trivial. They were not showing up for NA meetings. They were testing positive for THC. So a judge could very well have proceeded with them. And the fact that probation and parole has given a label that really, in my opinion, makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, doesn't prevent these from being probation violation reports.
Is there any guidance? So, I mean, circuit judges and in different circuits may treat them very differently. We may have some inconsistency as to whether some judges think these are initial reports of violations and others don't, because there's not really any guidance anyplace, is there?
That is correct, and I have no doubt, and I believe some of the cases that you will hear may involve courts, judges who didn't treat them that way, or we have no idea whether the judge treated them that way because it wasn't an issue in the particular case. What we know here is that this judge chose to treat them as stopping ECC from accruing because they were initial violation reports. They were the first notice of why that the judge had that the defendant had violated probation.
And in the field violation report, it just recounts them. It doesn't add any new violations, correct? Violation report simply recounts the four earlier violations. It doesn't add any new ones. Correct?
No, the field violation report in this case mentioned an additional violation that she had committed. In paragraph 3, Roman numeral 3 of the field violation report, it's a heading, I think it was paragraph 3, it says other violations, and then it lists all the new notices of citation that are at issue in this case. But the field violation report did involve a subsequent violation or alleged violation of her probation.
But at least with respect to the four earlier ones, the field violation report wasn't initial.
There was no field violation report issued contemporaneously with the violation. There was no field violation report issued. But you'll notice that in the statute, they never use the phrase field violation report. And you'll notice that in the amendment, they continue to use the phrase pre-sentence investigation report, which hasn't been used for close to a decade.
They didn't amend the statute to use an old term. They just never amended those statutes to keep up with other statutory changes.
Possibly, but in at least one of the sections that was amended, they did add the language sentencing advisory report or assessment report. So they did in some spots and not in others. But the fact that, and I hate to badmouth the legislature so close to the Capitol building, but the fact that they're not studying the language used by probation and parole at any particular time suggests that they're using these words to be descriptive and not to attach a fixed label for all time.
Was there any evidence in this case regarding the use of probation and parole of the different forms and their purposes, et cetera?
No evidence, Your Honor. There was no evidence introduced one way or the other.
And that kind of gets to my point that I rudely interrupted a question that Judge Stith had. You represent here the state, and obviously in your capacity then you're representing the court, the judge. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And if you look at the statute, who decides, who awards the earned compliant credit? Is it the court or is it the Division of Probation and Parole? Because the way the statute begins, it says the Division of Probation and Parole shall award earned compliant credit and then proceeds from there.
Well, I believe the Division of Probation and Parole is bound by the statute. Now, the statute itself specifically provides that you cannot appeal the calculation, which is why we are here on a habeas corpus writ. But I don't think the statute is intended or serves to exempt probation and parole from following the statute. So if it is a probation violation report, if it is an initial violation report, and the probation and parole department sees fit for whatever reason to label it a citation and doesn't want earned compliance credit, I believe the state would be the relator in this case, and I believe the state would be entitled to be the relator were those to be the facts. So I don't think the statute was intended to or does say that the opinion of probation and parole strips any court, let a trial court or this court, from review. I think it just says no appellate review, but there can be review by writ.
But I guess the question is it the court's responsibility to determine what the ECCs are, or is it the probation and parole's responsibility? And if the probation and parole has abused their discretion, should a probation and parole be standing in front of us today instead of you?
Well, perhaps, but we don't know what the calculation would be. So if we went on that route, we don't know what probation and parole said or what their position was in this case, because as Mr.
Well, then how can the court have abused its discretion?
Well, that's my point. I don't think the court did abuse its discretion at all.
Can you tell me, you were starting to say that you don't know what they calculated because...
Well, as Mr. Leiser pointed out, they figured out the optimal discharge date. Let me backtrack. I don't remember at what point they figured out the optimal discharge
date.
They were assuming that there'd be no site.
There was no update of that before the judge added.
Correct.
So what did the judge use then? The judge had to use his or her discretion at that point?
Well, both attorneys at the trial level argued whether or not citations would act to toll the running or the accrual of ECCs. And so we both argued it to the judge, and the state prevailed at that level before the trial judge.
You don't get another report from the Board of Probation and Parole when the time, you just once a year, and so you don't know what it was?
Well, I think the statute says twice a year the division shall calculate the number of months.
Well, I don't want to go out on a limb, but I don't believe we got another report with that calculation. If you ask me to swear to that under oath.
In the violation report, they said what the optimal date was and what the earned date was, right?
Yes.
And that's what the judge relied on.
I believe so. Yes. In any event, she ruled that the months that citations were in existence did not count towards.
Well, yes, she decided that, but that's also what probation and parole decided.
Yes. That's correct.
Can you address opposing counsel's argument that any ambiguity should inure to the benefit of the defendant under, I guess, the rule of lenity or comparable principles?
Well, we could all come up here and spout a bunch of aphorisms about statutory construction. But one of the big ones is to determine the intent of the legislature. And one of the reasons that the legislature told the accrual of earned compliance credits upon the filing of an initial violation report was so a judge could make the decision. And that's the exact same reason why the judge gets citations. The judge is not bound, and we have had judges who sometimes do want hearings after citations are filed. So it doesn't fit in with the statutory scheme.
If we're looking at the plain and ordinary meaning of the statute, it says initial violation report.
Yes.
It's ambiguous as to whether an initial violation report includes a citation.
Well, if you look at the plain meaning of the language, you have to decide, was this the initial report? Was it a report? Was it a report of a violation? And this fits the description of all three. So if you use plain meaning, it is an initial violation report. And there is no
document. Why does the statute now distinguish between the two?
I think because they wanted to clarify.
But it didn't clarify your way. It makes them two different things.
Well, I think they wanted to clarify and not say that it wasn't an initial violation report before the amendment of the statute. And this is why I pointed out the fact that if you adopt that interpretation, you're going to wind up with a conflict between 217.7034 and 217.7035.
And that sometimes happens, but it makes them different things.
I think the legislature could have phrased it differently. They could have said including a violation, a notice of citation, but they didn't. And so you have to look at legislative intent. And if you look at legislative intent, which is the primary purpose of statutory construction, they wanted the clock to be told so that the judge had the balance of a calendar month to decide whether or not to proceed in any direction. And that's why they used a term both before the amendment and after the amendment that doesn't appear in any document filed by probation and parole. And if you look at the reports that deal with situations we analogize to situations where probation officer wants the person to do some shop time in jail, they call it a report and then later on call it a violation report. But that particular report is one where the judge cannot find the person violated their probation and revoke their probation, but they're using descriptive terms. They're using these terms to describe what the report is, not how the report is labeled.
Thank you,
Counselor. You're out of time.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
I would like to first address the question that was raised about the responsibility of probation and parole vis-a-vis the court. Under the statute, it essentially says that P&P must notify the sentencing court board for probation case or the board or for probation cases the prosecuting attorney no less than 60 days before the date of the final discharge. We're of the opinion that the case summary report that was filed that had the optimal discharge date, which was filed essentially 12, 13 months prior, even though it was before the notices of citation in this case, did serve that purpose. It did list the optimal discharge date as that May 1st date. What I'm hearing is that it appears respondent wants it both ways. I mean, basically, with regard to the new wording of the statute, it essentially does distinguish between the two. It doesn't use a comma, including. It basically treats them as two distinct entities. We're of the opinion that those two existed in the statute as it existed at the time of this case.
But does that 2018 amendment apply to the facts of this case?
Does it apply?
Uh-huh.
And I'll try to better to
answer. Could be looking at that statute to this case, or should we be looking at the old statute?
I would argue that it was the statute that was in effect at the time, Your Honor. Again, the new statute does have, we would take the position that to go back retroactively, and if I'm understanding correctly, then apply this and possibly toll those notices of citation months, is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
We would argue that would be a rescission, and under the new language of the 21703, it does lay out a procedure. It does refer to if a hearing is held, all credits will be rescinded if, and then it lists that the board revokes the probation or parole, or the court places the offender in a departmental 120 program, or basically says that the nature of the probation violation itself would necessitate a longer term of
This was enacted long after your client's probation was revoked and long after if he gets ECC credits, he would have been out.
That's correct.
So if you were right about the old statute, which this court may or may not decide you were, he would have then have a vested right in having been released from probation. The new one couldn't apply.
That's what.
But if he's still in, if he's still in custody, then that would be another question.
Correct. And again, we're taking the position that because of the timing of the proceedings, we are arguing that again that the court's without statutory authority to revoke Ms. Coleman's probation.
You're out of time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.